Now we're holding on to Zion Ahmed Bey's second line from the bottom. We learned yesterday about when Chizkiyahu was buried, that they buried him b'male kibre b'nei David, and we said b'male meant in the best quality part of the area where the family of David was buried, namely next to David and Shlomo. We mentioned that because in the Mishnah we said that that a mazik has to pay minha aliyah. So we explained that minha aliyah similarly means from the best of his possessions, the best of his karka, or in the case of metalplim, that anything is considered meita. So now, having mentioned that, So now the Gemara darshens the second half of the same pasuk when it says by Yehudu b'malik kibre b'nei David. So the pasuk continues afterwards. The chovid of the
grave. Where is the grave? Where is the grave of David and Shlomo?
It's a good question. I mean, obviously, there's some place in the city of Yerushalayim. In general, there's a Mishnah, and later on in the Masechta, actually, we're going to learn that in general, you're not allowed to bury people in Yerushalayim except for the graves of David, the royal tombs over there were allowed to remain. Where they are in what's modern-day Yerushalayim or near it, I don't think we know for sure. Keep in mind, of course, that not all of what was the city of Yerushalayim at that time is now within the walls. Parts of it are nowadays outside the walls, and they have all the excavations that are going on over there south of the city of Yerushalayim. Traditionally, you know, you have on Hautzia, and there's a place that they identify as David's caver. Whether it is, in fact, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. How come we don't know? I mean, it seems so... unusual and unlikely that
well, on the contrary, when you consider how many times we've gone into Golos and how many times the city has been destroyed and rebuilt and whatever, the wonder is that we know anything over there. And we know where the Harabais is, and that's really, we know where certain other landmarks like Har HaZeisim are. That's really about it. To know an individual place like that, which has probably been destroyed and rebuilt and covered over and uncovered and whatever so many times, for anything, we're not going to know it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So the pasuk says, "B'chavod asu loy b'mosei." They gave Chizkiyahu great honor when he died. So what does that expression mean? Malamacho yeshiva yeshiva al kivrei. This teaches us that they set up a yeshiva, Talmidim, who would be sitting and learning Torah by his kever. Now, the reason why they did that for him, particularly Tosfos points out that he famously spread knowledge of Torah throughout the Jewish people. Like we touched on yesterday, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that he made sure that every single man, woman, and child in Eretz Yisrael is learning Torah and even becomes an expert in Torah, and that saved them ultimately from Sancheirev. So in recognition of that, then they put a yeshiva by his grave. Now Tosfos says it doesn't mean literally on top of, because that would be a problem called loyeg larosh, as we know, the same way, for example, you're not allowed to wear tzitzis when you visit a beis hakvaris, because like saying, if like mocking the dead, how you can do this mitzvah and you can't, the same way it would be with this. So therefore Tosfos says it would have to be that it was four amos away from the kever, where there's not such an issue of loyeg larosh. On the other hand, there are rishonim, Tosfos said, I mean, a peret says that no, in this case, where they're doing it for his honor, and they're doing it because he was such a distinguished talmid chacham, then therefore it might even be allowed within four amos of the grave. So here the Gemara is saying that they did that for Chizkiyahu. The Rambam seems to say that they do that in general for Jewish kings. Anyway, Pligi bar Rav Nosson v'Rabbanan. Now Rav Nosson and the Chachamim disagree. How long did they keep that yeshiva there? Chad Omer Shloisha. One says that they kept him for 3 days. V'Chad Omer Shiva. The other one says they kept those Tamidim learning there for 7 days. V'Ami Lo Shloishim. Or others say 30 days. Those are, as we know, those are actually the stages of Avelos. You have 3 days in which a person is expected to be crying, then 7 days to finish off Shiva, and then Shloishim. So corresponding to those is why they have the different numbers, why you have the different opinions of how long those Tamidim sat there learning Torah. So more on this topic. We learn in a braisa that when it says that they did honor to him when he passed away, and this is an expression we find only by Chizkiyahu. We don't find it by any other king. So therefore, obviously, it means the Gemara has to assume there's something unusual about it. So that's why first we were saying Yeshiva Yeshiva Al Kivrei, but now we're saying something else. So this refers to Chizkiyah. Rashi says it doesn't really need to say that. Obviously, we know the pasuk is talking about Chizkiyah. That's just the style of the Gemara. Anyway, she yotzel in front of shisho shloishim v'shisha elof chalutzei kosev. when he passed away and they had his Levaya, there were 36,000 people going out in front of him with their shoulders uncovered. The way they used to do it back then was when they tore Kriya, not only did they tear Kriya, but also they'd take the arm out of the sleeve so that the shoulder would be bare. We find in different places in Moed Katan it mentions it, in Masech the Smachos it mentions it, that this is how they would do it as a gesture of mourning. So therefore here you had 36,000 people doing that in front of Chizkiyahu. Why 36,000? Tosfos points out, since the pasuk is v'chavod asu loy b'moisa, the word loy is gematria 36. So since obviously it wasn't just 36 people, so therefore we assume it was 36,000. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Omelet of Nehemiah, but Nehemiah says, what's the big deal of that? Valo lefne Achav also came. Don't we find they did the same kind of thing when Achav died? They also, Tosfos points out, we have in other places where it says that they made a tremendous hesped for him. To be sure, he was a Rosha, but he still had, there were a lot of people on his side, so they were the ones who mourned for him and bared their shoulders and so forth. So in that case, there's nothing special about that they did that for Chizkiyahu as well. Ella, rather, Rav Nehemiah says the special kavod that they did for Chizkiyahu is shehinichu sefer Torah al mitosei. They put a sefer Torah on the bed, on the stretcher on which they were carrying out his body. Va'amru, and they said ki imzeh mashakosu bazeh. Chizkiyahu kept what it says in this in the Torah, and that was the honor and that was the honor that they did for him. So Rav Nehemiah says that was it. Obviously they didn't do that for Achav. You can't say that Achav kept the Torah. He was a Rosha. So therefore that was the unique honor that they did for Chizkiyahu. So the Gemara says, "V'ha'idna nami avdin hachi." So what? Nowadays we do that as well. So what's the special thing for Chizkiyahu? And the answer is, "Apuki mapkinan anuchi loy manchinan." Sure, in later times when a great Talmud Chacham passes away, we bring out a Sefer Torah by his Levaya. We don't actually put it on the beer. Here, they actually put it on that. The Borisem Anuchi Nami Manchinan, or you could say maybe even we do put it on the beer, on the stretcher. Hiim Loyam Rinan, but we don't actually make that announcement that he observed everything that it says in the Torah, whereas by Chizkiyahu they did. Now, does that mean that Yitaka can't do it for anything, for anybody else? There are Rishonim who learn the Nimukha Yosef here on the Rif. Says, if you have in later times a Talmud Chacham, where you know that he spread Torah to the same degree that Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda did, then sure, you could say this announcement for him also. When we say we don't say it, we mean that, we mean there's very few people who are of that caliber. On the other hand, other Mephoshim say that no, with Chizkiyahu, you have the unique thing. Not just that he kept the mitzvahs, lots of people keep mitzvahs, but that he got the entire Jewish people to, like we said, he put in a sword by the Beis Medrash and made it that every single woman, man, woman, and child was learning Torah, and that's unprecedented, and you never have anything like that again. Even in later times, you had people who spread tremendous knowledge of Torah among the Jewish people, but not to that degree. Okay, the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Baba Chana. So now the Gemara continues on this topic that Rabbi Baba Chana says, which is going to end up giving us another answer as well. Have a zilna bahadei b'Rabbi Yechanan l'mishal shmeita. One time I was walking together with Rabbi Yechanan because I was asking him something in Torah. Bahadei means with him. A different girsa, it says on the side here, is basrei. I was going behind him because the Gemara says elsewhere that a Talmud shouldn't walk right next to his Rebbe. He should walk a little bit behind him. Anyway, whatever the case, Rabbi Baba Chana says he was a Talmud, Rabbi Yochanan was the Rebbe, so he was walking with or behind Rabbi Yochanan because he was asking him something in Torah. He have a oyel beis hakisei. Then there came a point when Rabbi Yochanan had to stop and go to the bathroom. If I had asked him something in Torah just before. Or I asked him this particular thing about with Chizkiyahu, what was the covered gadol, and what's the big deal about that they put a sefer Torah on his beer when they do that for other people as well. Anyway, so I had asked him that. Loy Poshitlon, so he didn't answer the question, Adam Moshi Yode, until after he had come out of the bathroom, he had washed his hands, Manach Tfilin, he put on Tfilin, Mevorich, and he said the bracha. Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings over here in his notes that there was somebody who wanted to explain that it means he said the bracha asher yotzar, but Rabbi Yaakov Emden says no, it means that he said the bracha on tefillin. Bechlal, that's if you take, you have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. If you take off tefillin for a little while, you're not necessarily obligated to make the bracha again when you put them on, unless either you took them off for a while and l'masiach das from them, or you're in a situation where you can't wear them, which is over here. You can't wear tefillin in the bathroom. Therefore, when he comes out of the bathroom, you have to make a new bracha on them. Anyway, after finishing all of that, the hoder amalon, then after that, Rabbi Yochanan gave me a different answer. Afilu kiyam amrinan. We might even say by a Talmud Chacham in later generations that he fulfilled what it says in the Torah. So maybe they would in fact put a Sefer Torah on his coffin and even say kiyam zeh, like they said by Chizkiyahu, but limit loyam rinan, but to say that he taught Torah to other people, that we don't do. That was unique to Chizkiyahu. So that's another answer. So far we have several answers. One is that they, again, according to Yehuda in the Braisa, there's nothing to talk about. We're not talking about Sifrei Torah at all. We're talking about the number of mourners by his Leviah. According to Rabbi Nechemia, that we're talking about the honor that they did him involved a Sefer Torah. So we have one possibility is by Chizkiyahu uniquely, they put it on his mitzvah, which they don't do for others. The second possibility was, we said, that they do put it for others, but they don't say kiyam for others. And now, Rabbi Yochanan is saying a third possibility for others. They may even say kiyam, but they're not going to say limit. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? So does that imply that learning or teaching Torah is greater than observing it? Well, I'm a mild, don't we learn in the Gemara? We learned it most recently in Kiddushin. Gadol limud Torah. Learning Torah is great. This is, by the way, the word limud over here is a change of the sensor. It's really supposed to be Talmud. For some reason, at some point, the Christians decided they didn't like the word Talmud. And so in many places, the sensor has changed the word Talmud to limud or shas or other things like that. Anyway, gadol limud or Talmud really. Shat Talmud may be the day Maisa, because learning brings you to Maisa. So you see, on the face of it, that Maisa is greater. So what do you mean that we say Kiyam for other people, but we don't say limit when Kiyam is greater? So the answer is Loikasha Hola Migmar Hola Agmuri. There's a difference between learning Torah and teaching it. When it comes to learning Torah, sure, then Maisa of mitzvahs is greater than learning Torah. We actually have in Tanya in these days where the Alter Rebbe is talking about that idea of why it is that Maisa of mitzvahs in a way is greater. And then learning Torah, you're bringing down higher levels of other courses into the world. But when we're talking about teaching other people, that's greater than Maisa. So that's what we're saying. That kind of honor to say, that kind of compliment to say that he taught Torah to others, that they did only for Chizkiyahu. Now that's the point of Rashi's explanation. Tosfos points out on the face of it, in Kiddushin, the Gemara says the other way around over there. When we say Talmud Gadol Shem Levi L'Day Maisa, doesn't that show that Fakert was saying that learning Torah is greater. So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. First of all, in Kiddushin, Tosfos discusses over there the difference is when is Talmud greater than Maisa if you haven't learned yet. Loyam Oretz Chosid. After all, you can't do mitzvahs if you don't know what they are. So therefore you have to learn first. Here we're talking about where you already have learned and you already know. Then Maisa mitzvahs is greater. Anyway, Tosfos is saying over here, what Tosfos over here says, the first explanation is that once we say Kiyim, he fulfilled the Torah, that automatically includes that he learned. How would he have been able to fulfill the mitzvahs if he hadn't learned them? So then the answer is that there's a difference between learning and teaching, because when you teach other people, you bring them to Maisa, and then that's greater. Then Tosfos brings a girsa from She'iltis, from the famous Sefer She'iltis, the Rabbi Choy Goin, a Sefer from one of the Uli Goinim, where he has a different girsa in the Gemara over here. The girsa is not that we're talking about kiyam versus limud. Rather, the question is not so much from Rabbi Yochanan's explanation, but rather from what Rabbi Yochanan did. We were saying that Rabbi Yochanan, after he got out of the bathroom, he put on tefillin, and only then he gave them the answer in Torah. So the question is, isn't teaching Torah greater than Maisa? Why doesn't he answer them the question first and then put on tefillin? And the answer is that when it comes to that Fakir, She'iltis learns the other way around. To learn for yourself is greater, therefore, yes, if it was a matter of learning for himself, he would have done that first before putting back on his tefillin. But to teach other people is not as important, therefore he first put on the tefillin, and only then he taught them by answering the question. So that's a different
Well, that seems to contradict that seems to contradict the honor that was given to Chizkiyahu. As you said previously, he reached a degree of teaching the people that no one else did. So how do you reconcile that?
Well, so that's the thing. Tosfos is mentioning that the Shi'iltas does not have the Geusa over here, that the Gemara is saying anything about Kiyam Amrinan Limud Loy Amrinan. The Gemara is stopping with the point that the Gemara has stopped with the point that for most people, we don't even say Kiyam. The Gemara has stopped over there. For Chizkiyahu, we said Kiyam Zemash. For other people, we don't. Then, according to Shi'iltas, the next piece, which Rabbi Baba Hanna talking about what Rabbi Yochanan did, is not directly bearing on the difference between what they did for Chizkiyahu, but for others, it's sort of an indirect thing. You're telling me that Kiyam is the greatest thing you can say for a person, but how could that be if we see that, given that we say Godol Talmud, Shamevi the Demaisa, then in Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Baba Chana's case, why did he put on tefillin first? And the answer is because when it comes to teaching others, then doing a mitzvah is greater than teaching others. So in other words, according to his Girsa, the Gemara is not giving another answer of what they did by Chizkiyahu, rather the Gemara is sort of dealing with a side point. You're telling me Kiyam that we say by other people, we say Kiyam, we don't say Kiyam, Zem Ashikosav Azeh, whereas by Chizkiyahu they did. Well, what's the greatness of Kiyam? Why didn't they say something greater? And the answer is because of the difference between learning and teaching.
Kiyam is what? It's teaching?
Kiyam means fulfilling the mitzvahs. Limit means teaching the mitzvahs.
One second, fulfill the mitzvahs for yourself or teaching others?
So that's the thing. The Girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara over here is the Gemara is saying that to teach other people Torah is greater than Maisa HaMitzvahs. That's the point of Rashi's understanding. So again, according to Tosfos, we have two other ways of understanding what the Gemara is saying. One is that doesn't Kiyam automatically include that he learned the mitzvahs? And the answer is true, but it doesn't necessarily include that he taught. So therefore, an answer would be that we have to say by Chizkiyahu, they said he taught them, which just by saying Kiyam wouldn't be enough for us to know that. And then again, the other Girsa in Tosfos using Shi'iltas is we're b'chlal not really addressing the question of anymore, the question of what we said by Chizkiyahu. We're just asking the question, why are we using the word Kiyam? Why are we not using the greater advantage that he taught? And the answer is because teaching Torah is not on as high a level as keeping it himself. And therefore, and we see that from Rabbi Yochanan's own behavior, where he first put on tefillin to fulfill the mitzvah, and only then did he teach his Talmidim.
Can't you say that you cannot teach really if you don't do it yourself? So
we're not talking about where you wouldn't do the mitzvah at all. Of course not. I mean, there you have what the Gemara says in Yevamos, Kol Ha'omer Ein Li Torah, Afilu Torah Ein Lo. If a person says, I'm only going to learn Torah, I'm not going to bother doing the mitzvahs. No, here we're talking about, for example, Rabbi Yochanan. Look, I mean, he'd still be fulfilling the mitzvah of tefillin if he put him on after he taught his Talmidim. He didn't want to be without the mitzvah for any longer than necessary. So that's like a higher level of fulfillment of the mitzvah. Not that otherwise he wouldn't have been doing it at all. All right, anyway, we need to go on. The Gemara continues now with a drasha not directly related to what we said before, but Pashkus, the Gemara is bringing this in because we have a drasha on the pasuk Meshalchei Regel Asher V'Achamur, which we brought at the beginning of the perek to talk about where we learn from it the concept of Shein V'Regel that we said in the Pesukim in Mishpatim when it says about the damages of Shein V'Regel. It doesn't spell out what exactly those are, but we have a pasuk. We said that there it says v'shilachas v'iroi, and here you have the word m'shalchei regel. So now the Gemara is bringing a drasha on that pasuk. So Amar Rabbi Yechon Meshum Rabbi Shimon Yechai, my dichtiv ashreichem zorei al pamoyim. The pasuk says, happy are you who plant by all the water, m'shalchei regel asher v'achamer, who let loose the foot of the ox and the donkey. Poshet Pshat, and in context of the Pasuk, the Navi is talking about when the Jewish people are fulfilling what Hashem wants, and Hashem gives them great brachas, and Hashem gives them plenty of water and plenty of rain, and they can turn their animals loose to go and graze in the fields, in their own fields, that is, and there's plenty of and there's plenty for them to eat. But why does it mention specifically Asher V'Achamer? So it means Kol Oisek B'Torah B'Gmilas Chasadim. Anybody who is involved in learning Torah and in doing Gmilas Chasadim, Zoicha L'Nachos Shnei Shvatim, he will be Zoicha to the inheritance of two Shvatim, namely of Yosef and Yisachar, who are compared respectively to Asher and Achamor. We know in Moshe's brachas, he compares Shevet Yosef to an ox, and Yaakov in his brachas compares Yisachar to a donkey, Yisachar Hamor Garim. So now this person who does Torah and Gnos Hasadim, Ashrechem Zore Al Komoyim refers, as the Gemara is going to explain, where the words Zore and Mayim refer to Gnos Hasadim and Torah respectively, so he's Zoycha to the brachas of those two Shvatim. So in other words, Rashi explains, we understand the pasuk because of the planting that you do by all waters, therefore your feet are going to be sent into the Nachla of the Shor and the Hamor, of Yosef and Yisachar. So first of all, Shenemar Ashreichem Zorei, as the pasuk says, happy are you who plant, Ve'in Zriya Ela Tzedakah, the word planting refers to Tzedakah, Shenemar, as we find the different pasuk, Zero Lachem Letzedakah, V'kitzu Lefi Chesed, plant for yourselves tzedakah and harvest according to chesed, which the Gemara elsewhere explains. For example, it means that a person is paid back by Hashem for his tzedakah in proportion to the chesed that he put into it, because in other words, a person should give tzedakah ba'ayin yafa. The Alter Rebbe talks about in Tanya the idea that when you're giving tzedakah, you're planting seeds in the Olam HaSel Yonim, which then bear fruit down here. So therefore, so we see that planting is associated with tzedakah. The ein mayim el Torah, and water refers to Torah. Shenema hoy kol tzami l'chola mayim, as the Navi says, hey, everyone who's thirsty, go to the thirsty for El Akos, go to the water, meaning you're going to connect to Hashem, you're going to connect to El Akos through Torah. So therefore, the zodei al kol mayim refers to gemilas hasadim and Torah. The zoicha, the nachas, shnei shvatim, when we say he's zoicha to the inheritance of two shvatim, that means zoicha l'kila ki Yosef, he's zoicha to a kila like Yosef. Now, the basic meaning of the word kila means a canopy. So Marsha explains over here, it refers to the kind of canopy that a person has around a bed, and a bed being a metaphor for having children, like when we say when we talk about Yaakov, mitose shlema, and we use the same expression in the bracha hamafil, so the bed means having children. So zoicha l'kila ki Yosef means, therefore, that he's zoicha to have children, to have many children, like Yosef did. As in fact we find, Marsha points out, when you have the census of the Shvatim, Shevet Yosef, the second census, before they went into Eretz Yisrael, in Parshas Pinchas, Shevet Yosef in the aggregate, Menashe and Ephraim, was larger than any of the other Shvatim. So that's the bracha of Kila. There are other Mephoshim who understand Kila as meaning more like Meloshim Kola, like Nichshavam Kolsanafri, means beauty. Like gracefulness and beauty. Dichtiv ben Toras Yosef, as the pasuk says, Yosef is a graceful son. Ben Toras Yosef, bonus tzadah alei shur. The women of Mitzrayim walked along the walls to see him. So that's the kila. So whether we understand Kila as having children, where eventually one of those women over there became his wife, Osnas, and he had children of her, or whether we understand Kila as the beauty and the grace that all the women are looking at him, so we see this person is zoicha to that. V'zoicha l'nachlas Yisachar, and then this person is also zoicha to the bracha and the nachla of Yisachar, dichtiv Yisachar chamor gorem, as we see the pasuk says, the point is also the Gemara is darshining bonus tzada alei shur, as also that the word shur is related to the word shur. So therefore we see not only in Yosef, not only in Moshe's brachas, to Shevet Yosef, does he refer to them as a shur, b'chor shur e'hodoloi, but Yaakov in his brachas also refers to shur, a wool, which we're also darshining as shur, meaning an ox. The zoicha, because he acted in this way, therefore he's zoicha to the bracha of the ox. He's also zoicha to the inheritance of Yisachar, dichtiv Yisachar chamor gorem, where Yaakov says that Yisachar is like a strong bone donkey. One point of it is the Ravid makes a point that we find in Ksukim that the territories of Yosef and Yisachar in Eretz Yisrael were the most fertile of all the lands in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, when we say the person is zoicha to these brachas, we mean poshut that he's zoicha to very fertile land. There is an interesting explanation, an interesting Chassidish explanation from the Shem Mishmuel, the Sacher Chavar Rebbe, who says, you have a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that also mentions this pasuk, and it explains that it means that he'll be able to control his Yetzahara. So he explains that Gemara actually goes together with this one. There are two kinds of Yetzahara that a person might have, which are similar to a Shur and Chamur. One is Gaiva, because an ox is a very proud kind of animal, and then you have a Taiva for Gashmius, which is represented by the donkey Chamur Meloshin Chumri. Chasidus. So now this person, because he's Osek Batoto of Mos Chasadim, instead Hashem helps him transform those aspects of the Yetzirah, the gaiva he ends up using for Kedusha, like a person should, by Yigbal Liba B'dayach Hashem, and the taiva, instead of using his taiva screw in Yonim Gashmiim, he ends up being able to redirect them towards Alakos. So that's the bracha that he has, the bracha of these two Shvatim of Shor and Chamor. The Gemara continues, Ista Amri Oiv of Nosef on the fun of Yosef. Others say that the dual bracha that he'll get is his enemies will fall before him like Yosef. Dichtib Bahem Ami Minagach Yachtav Avsei Oret, as we find in Moshe's bracha to Yosef, where he says, and we're at the beginning of the parak, we mentioned this pasuk that an ox uses its horns for goring. Here we're saying that actually he's going to gore with his horns. He'll gore the enemies off to the ends of the earth. So the person is zoicha to that bracha, the zoicha the bina to Yisachar. He's also zoicha to have bina, to be able to understand one thing in Torah from another, like Yisachar. Dichtiv mnei Yisachar yoyde bina la'itim l'das ma'yasi Yisrael. As we find from Yisachar, there were people with tremendous bina who were able to tell the Jewish people what to do, in particular as far as calculating the calendar. So now the source of Torah and Mos Chasadim is that he has those two brachas as well. Marshall explains, like this, when we say, by Yoshua, for example, we find a lot of times, instead of having to go and fight each individual Knani nation, the Psukim mentioned a few times, and say for Yoshua, that a whole coalition gathered together, and then Yoshua and the Jewish people are able to defeat them in one blow. So that's what we mean. Bahem Ami Miganach Yachtav Afsei Oret, that altogether he's able to gore the Goyim and push them to the ends of the earth. One of the miracles that Hashem did, right, is that he gave them the idea to come out to come out in large groups like that. And Yeshua, after all, was descended from Yosef. And then you also have that he'll be zoicha to bina to be able to teach people, like we said before, that teaching people Torah is greater than even doing mitzvahs himself. And therefore, that's what Yisachar is able to accomplish. They're able to teach the people Torah, l'das ma'yase Yisrael, to know what the Jewish people should do. And therefore, we see that they had that source. So now the person who's Osik, the Torah of Mos Chasadim, has that source. Hadron al HaBa'as. Okay, so now that we've gone through the general rules of Nezikin, now the next few parakim, I'm going to start going through the specifics. In particular, at the end of the previous parak, we learned about the cases that have to pay Nezek Sholem, and we said Shein Regel, and then Shur Muad, and so forth. So now we're going to talk about all five of those in this parak. So the Mishnah starts off, Ketzar HaRegel Mu'edes, how is Regel, how is the foot of an animal Muad, in what way is it Muad? And the answer is L'shaba B'derech Hilucha, in that it breaks things in the normal way that the animal walks. So that's considered, that's Regel, and Chayev Nezek Sholem. Tosfos actually wonders, why are we starting with Regel rather than with Shein? If we're referring to the Mishnah at the end of the previous Perek, then that one began. Once we started listing the Mu'adim, we started listing Shein, so why don't we say Shein over here first? So Tosfos says, really, when you get down to it, Shein and Regel are practically the same thing, in the sense they're both learned from the same Pasuk, and they both have very similar dinim, both of them Yipater and Rosh Hasharabim, And here, since before we said Shein and then Regel, so therefore now it starts with Regel. That's often a style in Mishnayos where you'll have A, then B, then start with B, and then go back to explaining A. The Gemara is going to also point out that within Regel itself, within Shein itself, you have in the later Mishnah when it discusses it, you can have an Av and a Tolda, or rather here with Regel, you have an Av and a Tolda, and with Shein you have different others, and therefore you have that also. But Tosfos also now learns the first line of this Mishnah differently. Rashi is learning, again, Ketzar HaRegel Mu'edes is the question, and the answer is L'shaba B'derech Hilucha, and then according to Rashi, then the Mishnah is going on to deal with more details of that. Tosfos learns that, no, the whole first line of the Mishnah is the question. Ketzar HaRegel Mu'edes, L'shaba B'derech Hilucha, how is it, in what way is Regel Mu'ed to break things as it walks along, and the answer is going to be the next line of the Mishnah, Abahema Mu'edes. So anyway, the Mishnah continues, Habahema Mu'edes, an animal is Mu'ed, Lahalach Kedarko L'Shaber, to walk in the normal way and break things. So now, according to Rashi, this sounds repetitious, because the Gemara has already said, the Mishnah has already said, L'Shaber B'derech Hilucha, and the Gemara is going to ask why the Gemara is repeating it. According to Tosfos, the question is really, why we're switching why we're switching from regal to behema. Why start off teitar a regal mu'edis l'shabu b'derech hilucha, which is the question, and answer ha behema mu'edis. Why not just answer? Why use the word behema at all? Say mu'edis l'halach kedalko l'shabu. Or not even, we'll just say l'halach kedalko l'shabu. Why even mention the word behema? So the Gemara is going to deal with that question. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Hoisim of ha'etes, if the animal was kicking, which we've learned before that kicking is a tolda of keren, or if pebbles were shooting out from under the animal's feet, so as it walks along, it steps a little bit on a pebble and sends it flying, and that, with the kicking or with the pebble, it breaks kelim, and he's paying chatzi nezek for that. Now, Rashi explains that these are two different things. Meva'etes is a shinui. That's an unusual thing for an animal to kick. Therefore, why is it chatzi nezek? Because it's part of keren. As usual, keren, you're paying chatzi nezek only the first few times, and only once it becomes more do you pay nezek shalim.
It's like walking, especially kicking.
Yeah. As opposed to, on the other hand, tsuris is not considered a shinui, but we've learned before, and we're going to learn more extensively now in our perek, that tsuris is a special case where there's a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, and you end up paying chatzi nezek for it. We discussed that briefly in the previous paragraph when we were talking about Ovis and Toldos of the Ovis Nezikin, where we said that Rav Chista had said some of the Toldos are not like the Ovis, and he said specifically there is an example where Tzurus is a Tolda of Regal, and you're not paying for it the same as you would for Regal. So now, what is kicking doing over here? Given that kicking is part of keren, and here we're talking about regel. So Tosfos says, okay, because it's similar to tsuris in the sense both of them you're paying chatzi nezek. Various other mafoshim discuss details in that. I mean, the fact is, true, you're paying chatzi nezek for each one, but after all, they are much different. One is because of keren, and therefore it's tam the first few times, and the other one is because of a special din of chatzi nezek tsuris. So they give various other answers, for example, that it's true, but since, after all, kicking is done with the feet, then therefore the Mishnah mentions that over here. The Rashba, so therefore, since, after all, it is done with the feet, so therefore the Mishnah is bringing it over here. So that's the Rashba gives that as one answer. And number two is, we've learned before, that Regal, after all, is Chayev, is Potter in Rosh Hashanah, and Chayev only in Chatzar HaNizek, where Kerem, there's no difference. So one thing is, that Rashba points out, now we've had a Machlokas a few times already, and we're going to have later on in our parak, Reb Tarfon and the Chachamim, Kerem in Rosh Hashanah, are you paying Nezek Cholin the first few times or not? Reb Tarfon holds yes, the Chachamim holds no. So here, the Mishnah wants to tell us, like the Chachamim and not like Reb Tarfon, that even though it's in Chatzar HaNizek, nevertheless it's only Chatzi Nezek. He should have washed his animal, not to go in there, but still, if it gores, or in this case, not gores, it kicks, which is considered part of Keren, then nevertheless, he's only paying Chatzi Nezek, not like Reb Tarfon is going to say later on in this Peret, where he's going to learn that he pays Nezek Shalom. That's another reason why the Mishnah would mention it over here. Yeah, we said, for example, where the place is something where is a place where both of them are allowed to bring their oxen in, or where neither one, depending on Rashi's and Tosfos' gear. So yeah. Okay. The Mishnah continues. Dorsala pli v'shavartu. What happens if an animal steps on a keli and breaks it? V'nafala pli achav shavrei. And then a piece of that broken keli fell on another one and broke it. So alarishin v'shalom nezek shalom v'alachim v'shalom chati nezek. So then he's going to be paying nezek shalom for the first one, because that's regal. But the second one is going to be tsuris, because tsuris is not only, tsuris in general is what's called koichoi. He didn't directly break it, but from his koyach came something that something else broke. So the classic example of it is pebbles shooting out from under the animal's feet. But here we have another example where a piece of the keli that it broke fell on another keli. So therefore the second one is going to be only chati nezek. Continues the Mishnah. Hatarnegolim mu'odim halach kedalkin al shaber. Chickens are also mu'od. Now b'chlal, later on in the Masechta, the Gemara is going to explain, the Mishnah is going to explain, that all this time you've been talking about a shur that causes damage. The fact is, the halacha applies equally well to other kinds of animals and birds and whatnot as well. At the end of, in the fifth parak, the Mishnah is going to learn it actually from a gzeira shav. So that all these dinim apply equally well to other kinds of animals. So here the Mishnah mentions, for example, chickens are mu'ad, lahalach kadarkin al-shabar, that they walk in the normal way and they break things. So again, if a chicken breaks something as it's walking along in the normal way, then the owner is paying nezek cholim. But again, he's potter in Rosh Hashanah Abim for the same reason as we've been discussing. However, hoya dlil kosher baraglov, but if there was a dlil tied onto the animals, tied onto the chicken's feet, by the way, as far as the Dorsal Akli, Tosfos points out, the chiddush of it is, you would have to ask, of course, it's why would we think otherwise? You would think, Tosfos says, if Dorsal Akli and then a piece of that Kali broke another one, you would think it stepped so forcefully on the first one, so hard on it, that it caused a piece of it to fly off and break another Kali. You would think maybe that would be it meant to be Mazik. We're saying that no, we don't, shouldn't assume that, and we should assume that it was regal. So that was the chiddush of that part.
There is
tzuris, but we're saying there's going to be tzuris by chickens as well. But when you said just now in the Mishnah, when you said an animal stepped on a keli and broke it, and then another piece of the keli flew off and broke another one, the chiddush is that we don't say it meant to damage the first keli, and it should be considered keren. We say that it didn't mean to, and therefore it's regal, and therefore it's tzuris.
The first one is that, but the second one also, you would think that
when he broke the first one, it should be considered only chatzi nezek. Maybe it meant to break it. Otherwise, why would it have stomped on it so forcefully that it makes a piece shoot off and break another case? And nevertheless, we still say it's considered. So now, again, so the Mishnah says, chickens are moored to walk in the normal way and break, but if there was a dlil tied to the chicken's feet, Rashi says two possibilities. One is that dlil means anything that's tied to the chicken's feet can be called dlil. So it could be, for example, a piece of string, it could be, or whatever. The second possibility, Rashi says, that the girsa is not dlil, but rather dli, which means a bucket. Anyway, so if that was tied to the chicken's feet, and later on, the Gemara is going to explain, Rashi brings it over here, that now the chicken went and threw that thing, the chicken like took with its beak and threw that thing onto something else and broke it. So that would be considered tzuris. Oisha hoya mahadis, or if the chicken was mahadis, where mahadis means, either mahadis means, Rashi explains further on, that it means like dancing around, like the way chickens do on things. Different other mafroshim talk about that it may mean that also like it digs with its claws into the ground, as it often does. Or like scratches in the ground, whatever. Maybe, whatever. Anyway, if it's doing that, on the Shabbos HaKelim, and so if it was doing that, and breaking Kalim by doing that, Mishalim Chatzi Nezek, then also you're paying Chatzi Nezek for that, because that's also Koichai, and therefore it's considered Tzuris. So the Gemara says, Omalei Ravina L'Rabba, Hainu Regal, Hainu Behema. Isn't Regal and Behema the same thing? So, according to Rashi, the question is, once the Mishnah has answered that L'Shabbat, once the Mishnah has asked, Ketzer Regal Mu'edis, and the answer is L'Shabbat B'derech Hilucha, why is it then repeating and saying HaBehema Mu'edis? According to Tosfos, the question is, once we have the question, Ketzer HaRegel Mu'edis, L'Shabbat B'derech Hilucha, why are we continuing with the word HaBehema Mu'edis, rather than just saying L'Halach Kedavka, without saying the word Behema at all? Omalei, so Rava answers him, Tana Ovis, for Katani told us, because the Mishnah wants to mention the Av Nezikin, and then the Mishnah wants to mention the Tolda, because you have the Av of Regal, is the animal actually stepping on something with its feet, and then you have the Toldas, which we've learned before, which the Gemara now is going to bring a Braisa soon, that lists those. For example, where it brushed against something with its body while it's walking and damaged it, or you have something attached to the animal, like the bit, like the reins, or something that the animal was carrying or whatever, and it broke something, where all of those are told of regal. So the Mishnah starts off by saying, Ketzer HaRegel Mu'edis, which is the Av, and then it goes on to say, Abahema Mu'edis, meaning the Toldas. So Ravina asked, Elameata, Sefer, in that case, then what are you going to say in the Sefer, meaning the following Mishnah, on your testament days? Often the Gemara assumes that all the Mishnayos in one parak, at least all the ones on the same topic, are all one long continuous Mishnah. So it can use the word Reisha and Sefer to mean what we have as different Mishnayos. Anyway, Dikatoni Hashem Mu'edis, Habehema Mu'edis. There you have where it says the Shein is Mu'ed and the animal is Mu'ed. My Ovis and my Toldos Ikka. What Ovis and what Toldos are there? And you do have tovus of shame, to be sure, but the tovus would be, for example, where the animal rubs against the wall and because it's itchy or whatever, and it enjoys that, and then it accidentally knocks down the wall. So there you can't say that when the Mishnah continues over there, habahema mu'edus, that an animal is moored to eat fruits or vegetables, that would be part of the av of shame. That's not part of the tovus. So what are you saying? That it says first regal and then behemoth to mention the av and the tolda by shame. That wouldn't work, because then the Mishnah should be referring to behemoth and mentioning things that it does with its body, for example, scratching against the wall. So the Gemara says, Haba kamahad alebe b'chusa. So Rava answered Ravina kind of jokingly. He said, he says, you know what, anosh shanoi chada, bat shanoi chada. Look, I've explained one Mishnah, you explain the next one. Don't expect me to tell you all the answers. Well, the Gemara says, "V'taima ma'ai taka." What is the reason? Why does the Mishnah use the word regal and then behema and then shein and then behema?
Even though the Talmud do A, B, B, and A.
No, never mind that. The question is, why are we using the word behema in connection with shein? By regal, fine. We have Rava's explanation that we're saying because regal means with its feet, and behema would mean with any other part of its body. But by shein, since later on when it says a behema mu'edus lechol peres v'yirokus, that it is moored to eat fruits and vegetables, which is all part of the av of shein. So what is the word behema there adding at all? In other words, the question would be, why is the Mishnah there? So Ravina's question was, why is the Mishnah there not saying the expression when it says ketzed out shein mu'edus lechol asaroy lo ha behema mu'edus lechol peres v'yirokus? Why doesn't he say mu'edus lechol peres v'yirokus? Why use the word behema? Okay. Yeah.
Here
the answer is it's av and tolda, but there you're not mentioning a tolda of shade because you're just mentioning the av again because you're mentioning eating peiros v'yirokas. So what's the reason? Amar Rav Ashi tana shein dechayev katani shein de behema, because in that next Mishnah, first when it says shein refers to the teeth of wild animals. So if you have a, like we learned at the end of the previous pedic, if you have a lion or a wolf or whatever, and it eats in its normal way, then you chayev for that as shein. And then after that, it mentions the shein of a behema, namely where it continues when it eats fruits and vegetables. That would be a behema because chayas are carnivores. They eat meat. They don't eat peiros v'yirokas. So for them to eat peiros v'yirokas would be something unusual. So for them it would be keren. But for a behema, it's normal for it to eat fruits and vegetables. And why do we need to say that? Sakudat Hamina, because otherwise you might think, look, after all, the pasuk says v'shilachas v'ira iksiv. The pasuk says where a person lets go his animal in somebody else's field, and the word be'iroi is the equivalent, it actually explains the Aramaic equivalent of the word behema. So you would think, behema ain chayaloi, maybe he's only chayav if his domestic animal causes damage, not if he has wild animals. Okay, so maybe you could say, in other words, that you're not going to say maybe he's completely potter, that if he has wild animals, fine, you would say maybe that he's not completely potter, but maybe you would think, the Shittim Mukabetzos explains, that maybe you would think that it's a tolda of shein, and therefore we need to be told that no, it's actually part of the av. In which case, Tosfos wonders then, tackle why doesn't the Mishnah mention the toldus of shame? Here in our Mishnah, we're implying the toldus of regal. Why, tackle, the next Mishnah is only mentioning the av of shame and not mentioning the toldus, for example, the animal scratching itself against the wall and knocking down the wall. Okay, Akasha. Anyway, so the point is, so Rav Ashi is explaining that the next Mishnah, when it says, Ketzer Hashem Mu'edus, and then when it continues, Habehema Mu'edus, which are the first words, Ketzer Hashem Mu'edus, is referring to a wild animal. And the second one is referring to, and the second one that's more lechol peiros v'yirokas is talking about a domestic animal. And we need to be told both of them. Kamash malon, b'chaya, b'chalal behema, we need to be told that no, chaya is included in the category of behema. The word behema, sometimes in the pasuk, can be used to include wild animals as well. Rashi brings, for example, we have when the Torah lists the kosher animals, the kosher land animals in Parshas Re'eh, it starts saying "Zois habehema asher techelu," and then it lists the 10 kosher species of animals, of which 7 of them are wild animals. Ayel, tzvi, v'yachmu, etc., are all wild, and nevertheless they're included in the category of behema. Tosfos says, actually, here really what it is it's not really quite the same thing. After all, birds are definitely not included in behema, and yet again, when we learn in the fifth parak, we're going to learn that birds are in this category as well. As we said in our mission, chickens, for example, are moored. So it's not really so much that we're saying that chaya b'chla behema, we're saying in general that when in general we're going to learn later on in the Masechta that when it says behema, it includes any kind of animal, any kind of living creature that you might have that you might have in your possession. Anyway, so the Gemara says yihachi hamibay lelemisni bereisha. The question is, in that case, then it should have said first the behema first. So first the Mishnah should say that a behema is moored to eat payless for Yerokas, and then it should mention again Shane, and then we would understand that that means the Shane of Achaya. After all, the Pasuk mentions Be'iroi, which means behema first. So why is the following Mishnah implying Machaya first? And the answer is, as the Gemara sometimes answers, Hai d'asule midrosha chavivale, because something that we learn out from a drosha is more precious to the Tana, more than something that we just have spelled out for us in the Pasuk, and therefore the Tana wanted to mention the Chaya first, even before the Behemoth. Because the Chaya is a Drosha, because we're saying, after all, the Pasuk is the Iroi, which on the face of it means only domestic animals. Only from a Drosha do we learn later on in the Masechta that all animals are included. What we learn it from is basically like this. By Shabbos, the Torah tells us in the Aseres HaDibros that you're not allowed to have your Shurcha v'chamurcha do work. Now, it's not only your shor v'chamur, it means all other behemoths as well. So we learn from that the same way over here. It doesn't only mean shor v'chamur, it means all other kinds of animals as well. Anyway, so that's sort of drasha, therefore it's mechaber to him. So the Gemara asks, ihochi, if so, reisha nami lisni ahud like siva bereisha. In that case, then in the reisha, namely in our Mishnah, then also it should be listing the one that it doesn't say explicitly first. Namely, the Mishnah should first be mentioning habehemu mu'edis lahalich, that an animal is moored to break things as it walks along, for example, by brushing against them or whatever, and then it should mention where it steps on them, which is the actual regal that it says in the pasuk, and then it should do it that way. So the Gemara says, Hochi, the Gemara says, Hochi Hashta, how do you think to even make such a comparison? When it comes to the behema versus the chaya, both of them eating each in a normal way is part of the av. Because again, we said, you shouldn't think that the domestic animal is an av and the wild animal a tolda. No, both of them are equally considered av. So therefore, you can say hach da'asi l'midrasha chavivalei. So the one that comes from a drasha is more precious to the tana, and therefore he mentions it first. Hacha, but over here you're talking about an av and a tolda. Shavik av v'toni tolda. Do you expect the tana to ignore the av altogether and first discuss the tolda? Not logical. You always mention the av first. So therefore, that's a more logical reason to say that our Mishnah should begin with regal and only then discuss where it does things with its body or whatever, which is the tolda, whereas in the next Mishnah, since you're dealing with two others, then you might as well put the one with the drasha first. Another answer you could say, since at the end of the previous parak, we finished off with regal, so therefore our Mishnah starts with regal rather than starting with behema, because again it has that style of ending with the last thing, of starting with the last thing that we ended with. In fact, the Mephoshim will point out that really the very last thing we said in the list of Muadin in the previous Mishnah is Bahanochosh. Well, that's kind of included in regal in the sense that if an animal, that if a snake slithers on something and damages it while it's doing that, that would be a tolda of regal because it's normal for the snake to move that way. Okay. We learn in a Braisa. Behema mu'edis lahalach kadarko l'shabu keitzed. What do we mean when we said in our Mishnah that a behema, that an animal is moored to walk in its normal way and break things, not just with its feet? Keitzed, what does that mean? Behema shenichnas l'chatzara nizik. The animal goes into the chotzer of the nizik, because again we've learned that regal applies only there, not in Rosh Hashanah. And certainly not in Rosh Hashanah Mazik, because then he has every right to have his animal be there and the other person has no right to have his payrus there. The yizika begufa derech hilocha, if it damaged something with the body in the normal way of walking, so it brushed against something and broke it, or with sa'ora derech hilocha, or with its hair, with its fur, as it's walking along, so let's say something got stuck to its hair and broke, ba'ukaf sha'aleha, if the animal caused damage, and again, we're talking about all of this inadvertently, it didn't mean to cause damage, ba'ukaf sha'aleha, with the saddle that's on it, so the saddle got caught on something and broke it, or with shlif sha'aleha, or with a bundle of merchandise, with sacks of merchandise that are on it, or with prumbia shabapia, or with the bit that's in the animal's mouth that got caught on something, or with zug shabatzavara, or the bell around the animal's neck, v'chamur b'masoi, or a donkey causes damage with the burden that's carrying on its back, which Tosfos points out that when you saddle up a donkey and you put burdens on it, they're not usually tied as tightly as with other animals. So that's why even though we already mentioned the shlif shaleha, which means sacks of merchandise on it, we have to spell out again by a hamur. You would think it's not as tightly attached. Maybe it's not considered like his goof, and nevertheless, we're saying it is. So it's not considered tsurotis, it's considered part of his actual goof, and therefore if he causes damage with it inadvertently, then it's nezik sholem, then it's right. On the other hand, the Braisa continues, Sumchus Omer, Sumchus, the famous Talmud of Reb Meir, says tsurotis, as far as tsurotis, where pebbles shoot out from under the animal's feet, v'chazir shoyen nova ba'ashva, or if a pig was rooting around in the trash, Rashi explains that nover means like it's kind of digging over there, with its snout. Tosfos brings a different explanation based on Targum that it means that it's eating. So in those cases, vehizik, if it caused damage, mishalim nezik sholim, then you pay nezik sholim for those two. So you might ask, hizik pshita. Obviously, if it caused damage while it's digging around in the trash over there, or then you pay nezik sholim. You're right. What Sumchus means to say is, if while it's doing that, it causes pebbles to fly around, then he's also paying. Then he's paying nezik sholim, because Sumchus disagrees with the concept that we said before that tsurotis is chatzi nezik. He holds that tsurotis is nezik sholim. Now you have an interesting point that Achronim bring up. The Gemara says. The Gemara refers to tsurotis as hilchsa gmiri law, meaning that we learn it as a halacha. It's explained to be halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Now we have a general rule that Rambam says nobody argues on a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So then how is Tsumchus arguing on it? So they give a couple of answers. One of them is that maybe hilchsa gmiri law doesn't mean halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Maybe it means that it's a well-known halacha to the chachamim, and it's almost as strong as a halacha l'moshe m'sinai, but it's not actually. They give other answers as well. Maybe when the Chachamim first brought the point to the Beis Medrash, they didn't actually identify it as Halacha Moshe Mishinai, so therefore Sumchus felt free to argue about it. Or maybe, I think the Maratz Chayus gives an answer, sure, there's a Halacha Moshe Mishinai about Tzuris. The Halacha is that you chayav to pay. What was the Halacha Moshe Mishinai? How much you chayav to pay, that the Chachamim argued on. That was not detailed, was not clear, and the Chachamim argued on that. Anyway, the point is, Tosfos says that there's tsurotis not only of regal, there can be tsurotis of shein as well. Here, the pig is rooting around in the trash, finding something to eat, and while it's doing that, it causes pebbles to go flying. That would be tsurotis that come from shein rather than regal, and also you're going to be chai, also the owner of the pig is going to be chayav chatzi nezek, but according to Sumchus, he's going to be chayav nezek sholim. Okay, the Gemara says tsurotis man dechar shmayu. Where did it ever say anything? Sumchus is saying that tsurotis, you pay nezik sholim, but where did the Braisa until then mention tsurotis that Sumchus is arguing on? If you're saying that Sumchus says this, implies that there are other tanoim who argue with him. Where did we find that? So therefore, chsurim echsur, the Braisa is missing words. V'hochi katoni. It means to say like this. Tsurotis ki orchayu katzi nezik. The normal kind of thing of tsurotis, where an animal walks in the street and causes tsurotis to go flying and they break a keli or whatever, is paying chatzi nezek. And the chazir shoy nova bash, but the same way if the pig is rooting around in the trash or eating in the trash, the hit is and he causes pebbles to go flying, the hizik, and he causes damage with that, mashalim chatzi nezek. Then also it's considered tsurotis, and therefore the Tanakhama is implying that he's paying chatzi nezek. Sumchus lemer, no, tsurotis for chazir shoy nova bash with the hit is the hizik, mashalim nezek shalim, and Sumchus disagrees in those last two cases because he holds that tsurotis, you're paying nezek shalim. So he disagrees again with what we said before that tsurotis is chatzines. Okay. So now let's define more things about the difference between the animal itself causing damage versus its koyach causing damage, where again we've established so far that tsurotis means the koyach of the animal. So, tonen abamen, tonen golden treim africhin mimokim mimokim, if chickens are flying around from one place to another, v'shibru kelim v'kanfein, and they broke kelim with their wings, so the wings actually touched the keli and broke it, mishalim, nezik sholim, then the owner of the chicken is paying nezik sholim. V'ruach shibu kanfein, on the other hand, if the kelim were damaged by the wind that came from their wings. So they were flapping their wings, and that caused the keli to fall down and break. Then that would be Misham and Chatzin Nezek. Then that's the Tzuris, and he's paying Chatzin Nezek for that. Sumchus Lerman, Nezek Shalom. Again, Sumchus argues and says Nezek Shalom, because again, he holds that Tzuris, he's paying Nezek Shalom. Tanya Idach, we learn in another Braisa, Tanya Golan Shoy Mahadsin Agabe Isa, if chickens were Mahadsin on top of dough, where we said before, Mahadsin Rashi defines as Meraktin, they're dancing on it, and other Rishonim learn that it means like they're digging with their talons, with their claws in it. If they're doing that on dough, Valgabe Paris, or on top of Paris, the Tinfoy Nikru, and they dirtied the dough with Paris, or they pecked at it, Meshalom, Nezek Shalom, then the owner of the chicken is paying Nezek Shalom, because that would be, all of that is considered regal. To be exact, actually, you have, the Rashba points out, if they rolled around on them because they enjoy that, then that wouldn't be regal, that would be shame. Either way, this dinim are much the same. It's Potter and Rosh Hashanah Adam, and Chayev only in Rosh Hashanah. Helu offer etzuris. On the other hand, if they're dancing or scratching or whatever, they kicked up dirt or pebbles, and that made the dough or the peiris dirty. Mesham and chatzin nezek, and they're paying chatzin nezek because again that would be tzuris. Sumcho says nezek shalom, and again Sumcho says nezek shalom for the same reason as before. Now tani idach. Then we learn a third brayser. Tarnagol shoyim afriach mimakim lemakim. If a chicken was flying from one place to another, the yotza ruach mitachas knof of the shibur es hakelim, and wind comes from under its wings and breaks kelim, because the wind, in other words, causes the keli to fall over, and the wind, the air that was stirred up causes the keli to fall over and break, mashalim chatzin nezek, then you pay chatzin nezek. So the Gemara points out, stomach rabbanon, here we have a stam braisa, that's like the rabbanon, where it doesn't mention sumchos of opinion at all. Yeah, in other words, the chicken was flapping its wings, and that stirred up a wind that knocked over a cave. So it didn't directly touch it, therefore that's tzuris. Now, the Pnei Yeshua points out, each of these brises was taught in a different base medrash. So the Gemara is not wondering why we need so many brises, because every base medrash had their different style of teaching the din, and in one of them, and in two of the brises, it also explained what sumchus hold, and the third brise it doesn't. But here we have one that's stam according to the Chachamim, and doesn't even mention sumchus's opinion. Okay, Omar Rava, Vishlema Sumchos. Now we have to understand the logic behind it, Rava said. I can understand Sumchos' opinion, because Saba Krichiku Gufa Yang. Sure, he holds that the koyach of an animal is considered exactly like its body. So the same way as you'd be chayev for what the animal does with its body, for example, pushing against it, or stepping on it, or touching it with its wings, or whatever. So the same way you're equally chayev for what it does with its koyach. El Rabbanan, but according to the Rabbanan, what are they holding? Iki Gufa Yang. If they hold that the koyach of the animal is the equivalent of the goof, kula nezek boi l'shalem, then you should have to pay the full nezek. We love the goofoi dummy, and if it's not considered like goofoi, chatzin nezek nami lo l'shalem, you shouldn't have to pay chatzin nezek either. Where are we getting this chatzin nezek from? Hoda omar rabba, lo'olam ki goofoi dummy. In fact, you can answer the tzurdis, or the koyach, is considered like the goof, the chatzin nezek tzurdis, hilchzeg mi'ilah, but we have an accepted, a known halacha, of chatzin nezek tzuris. So again, we can say that it means halacha l'moshe Sinai, that there exists such a nezek, and that the person is chayev for it, but the chachamim were arguing what it means exactly. Or it can mean, it's not literally halacha l'moshe Sinai, that there was a known halacha to the chachamim, but therefore sumchus feels free to argue about it. Because again, nobody's going to argue on halacha l'moshe Sinai. Okay. So Omar Rava. So Rava gives a rule in this connection. Here, now we need a little bit of background for this to understand how things work with a zov. If a zov touches anything, then that thing becomes tamei. Also, if a zov moves anything, even indirectly, then he also makes it tamei. For example, if a zov were to take a stick and use it to push a person, that other person would become tamei. Same, well, the other person becomes an avatoma, yeah. Directly or indirectly. Now, you do have, Tosfos points out, to be exact, with a Zov, you have, let's say, if the Zov puts the stick under his armpit and pushes somebody with it, then the person is not going to become Tomei, or then the person is not going to become Tomei. He has to be holding it in his hand or some other normal part of his body. Here, Nizokin, we're not going to be making that distinction, but still. Anyway, the point is, though, so you have cases where a Zov, where a Zov causes something to move indirectly, then
So now, for example, if a Zav were to throw something at a person, then what happens is the thing that he held onto and threw is a Rishon L'Truma. It's not Matame, the person that it lands on. So if a Zav were to take a rock or something and throw it at somebody, the other person remains Tahor. But if a Zav were to take a stick and push the other person, then he would become Tame. So Omar Rava, Kol Shav is Zav Tame, any case where if a Zav does something, it makes the other person Tame. The Nizakin, Mashalim Nezak Shalim, the equivalent case with Nizakin, then you're paying Nezak Shalim. The Choshim is Zav Tahar, wherever a case where with a Zav you're touching the other person and the other person remains Tahar, the Nizakin, Mashalim Chatzi Nezak, then by Nizakin the equivalent would be considered Surus and you're paying only Chatzi Nezak. So let's say, for example, the animal directly stepped on something and broke it, then you're paying Nezak Shalim. The equivalent of that would be a Zav steps on something that's meant to be stepped on, Tumas Midras, the thing becomes an Avat Tumah. On the other hand, we're saying if a Zav throws something, then the thing that he threw it at is Tahar. So they're the same thing, right? Nezik, and you're only paying Chatzi Nezak if the animal, let's say, takes something and throws it, which would be Tzuris. So the Gemara asks for Rava Tzuris also Lashminen. So what's Rava's Chiddush? He's telling us the concept of Tzuris. We know that already. Rava Agola Meshechas Bekoren Kamash Malon. Rava wants to tell us of Chiddush where you have actually different Gusois over here. You have different understandings over here among the Rishonim, whether the word is Egla or Agola. Egla means a calf. Agola means a wagon. So the gears that we have in front of us over here is Egla Meshechas Bekoren. If you have a calf that's pulling a wagon, the point is, in other words, that now, if while the calf or other animal is pulling the wagon, the wheels of it ride over Kalin, and the Kalin broke, then you're going to be paying Nezek Shalin. Wouldn't it be considered like Tzuris? No, because the fact is, by a Zob, you would have a similar thing. That if a Zav was sitting in a wagon and the wagon rode over Kalim, and those Kalim are the kind that would be Tomei Tumas Midras, then they do in fact become Tomei because the Zav's weight was resting on him. So that's what Rava wants to tell us. So you wouldn't consider it like Tzuris, and Rishonim explained that Ivan, for example, explains because it's more usual. Unlike, for example, unlike Tzuris, which are a little bit unusual, and unlike, for example, in the Mishnah, we said when a Zlil is tied to, gets tangled around a chicken's feet, which is a little unusual, it's usual for an animal to be pulling a wagon, therefore we can't consider it Tzuris. So it would be more like what we said before about the load on the animal's back that got tangled in something. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Hananel has a Girsa over here, and other Rishonim also do, that the word is agola meshaches, and what we mean is that a wagon that's being pulled. So we're not focusing so much on the animal pulling the wagon. We're saying, for example, the same way as if a zav was pulling a wagon with somebody inside it, that other person is going to become tummy because the zav is pulling the wagon and therefore moving the person along with him. The same way over here, the wagon being pulled and causing damage, then we're saying it's considered nezek shalim. So Tanya Kavasei the Rava. We learn so therefore, according to that Girsa, you don't have the word Bekoren, just Agola Meshechas. When a wagon, the word is not Egla, but Agola, meaning a wagon, and Meshechas that's being pulled. So Tanya Kavasei the Rava. We learn in a Braisa like what Rava says. What does it mean that an animal is moored to break things in the normal way of walking? An animal goes into the Chotzer of the Nizek, which is where you're going to be Chayav for Regel. It caused damage with its body in the normal way by brushing against something, or with other derech levocha, or with its hair, where something got tangled in its hair, with the saddle on it, or the bundle of merchandise on it, or the sacks of merchandise, or the bit in its mouth, or the bell around its neck, or a donkey with burden, all of those we listed previously, but now we have another one, the egla meshechas v'karen, or a calf that's pulling a wagon, which is now the new one that Rava added, mishalim nezek cholim, then you're paying nezek cholim. So you see this braisa says exactly what Rava is saying, that case, we compare it to a zav, and we say the same way by a zav, again, if a zav is sitting in a wagon that's being pulled by an animal, or according to the other gear, if a zav himself is pulling a wagon, either way, the other thing is going to become tame. The same way over here, we have nezek cholim for that, because it's considered the animal itself rather than the koyach of the animal. Okay, and then we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with various other cases of Tzuris, and then deal with them in more detail.